Balfour promised to establish the Israeli entity, and its result is everything Palestinians still suffer from today, such as displacement, destruction, and pain. That was a 70-year-old Palestinian's view on the centenary of the Balfour Declaration. While just 67 words, the letter sent 100 years ago from Britain's then foreign secretary to the head of an influential Zionist banking family has had far-reaching consequences. It promises a state to Zionists despite Palestinians comprising some 90% of the population of Palestine. Join me, Waqar Rizvi, as we discuss Thursday's centenary of the Balfour Declaration. Let's go directly now to Ramallah, where we're joined now by Press TV's Mona Kandil. Mona, tell us about how the centenary of the Balfour Declaration is being marked in the occupied territories.
Well, as you have said, today it's 100 years since the Balfour Declaration, and Palestinians are still suffering. Palestinians were hoping that after 100 years, at least the United Kingdom would recognize the Palestinian state, would compensate the Palestinians, or at least apologize for its awful declaration. Palestinians say that Britain is the one responsible for the establishment of Israel and the occupation of the Palestinians. Today there were demonstrations across the occupied West Bank as well as in Jerusalem, Al-Quds. Thousands of Palestinians took part in anti-Balfour Declaration protests in Ramallah, in Beit Lahem. In Jerusalem, Al-Quds, thousands of Palestinian students have written letters to British Prime Minister Theresa May decrying the Israeli occupation and saying that Britain must apologize for the Palestinian people for allowing Israel to be established and for the continuous occupation and the crimes committed by the Israeli regime against Palestinians. Of course, these messages have been submitted to the British consulate in Jerusalem, Al-Quds. However, Israeli forces attacked Palestinian demonstrators that were including students. One of the protesters succeeded to raise the Palestinian flag inside Jerusalem, Al-Quds. In Ramallah, from all walks of life, including political factions, students from civil society took part in the demonstration, and they marched towards the British Cultural Office in occupied Ramallah, and also expressed their anger over statements by British Prime Minister Theresa May in saying that Britain this year will celebrate in pride the Balfour Declaration and the establishment of Israel, and her invitation to Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to take part in the ceremony that would be held in the on the 100 years anniversary of the Balfour Declaration. However, Palestinians and Palestinian Authority mainly said it will be suing the British government for setting the base for the establishment of the Israeli state. Palestinians insist that Britain today should apologize for the Palestinian people and recognize its legal responsibility following the consequences of the Balfour Declaration.
Okay, Mona, we'll leave there at that. But of course, as always, we appreciate your reporting for us. Our guest for tonight's debate, our author of Palestine, Israel, and the U.S. Empire, Mr. Richard Becker, who is joining us live from San Francisco. And we're also joined by author and political commentator, Mr. Jeffrey Alderman, who is joining us live from London. Gentlemen, thank you both for joining us. Mr. Alderman, I'll start with you. Is the Balfour Declaration, do you think, a reminder that Israel was really the result of a colonial project?
No, not at all. I have a facsimile of the declaration here in front of me, and it says that the British government would view with favour the establishment in Palestine of a national home for the Jewish people, subject to two conditions that we can discuss if you wish. Now, when the mandate was given by the League of Nations to Britain, the Balfour Declaration was incorporated in that mandate, and the Palestine, that the mandate covered stretched to both banks of the River Jordan. And in 1921, the then British colonial secretary, who happened to be Winston Churchill, simply announced that Britain was not going to permit any Jew to settle in Mandate Palestine east of the Jordan River. That was going to be an exclusively Palestinian Arab state, and it's the state we now call Jordan. So a Palestinian state was created, Arab state, alongside a Jewish national home.
Mr. Becker, what do you make of that? To many people, this would just be seen as a colonial project.
Well, that's a joke. Your other guest just told a joke, unintentionally, of course. But the father, the person is considered by the State of Israel as the father of the Zionist project, himself, in writing a letter to Cecil Rhodes, the arch-imperialist British colonizer of Africa, and appealing for British support for the Zionist project. And he said, why do I write to you? Because it is something colonial. So, you know, if those are the words that are coming from the mouth of the father of Zionism, the founding father of Zionism, how can you deny it's a colonial project? I mean, the fact is, I think that Edward Said, the renowned Palestinian intellectual, put it that this is another example of a European power taking action in regard to a non-European territory and then promising it to yet another foreign group. Dr. Ismail Zayed, another Palestinian historian, said Palestine did not belong to Balfour to assume such generosity. And of course, that is true. In 1917, November 1917, when the Balfour Declaration was issued, the population of what became Mandate Palestine was more than 92% Muslim and Christian Arabs. It was less than 8% Jewish, and probably a majority of the Jewish, the indigenous Jewish people there were without question against Zionism themselves and saw it as a recipe for causing conflict in the region. So you have really the British government, the British imperial government, in the midst of the most deadly war in history going on, promising to a group that is about 4 or 5% of the population that they will have a national home in this territory, and then saying about the Arabs who live there that nothing will be done to compromise their civil and religious rights. So the settlers from outside, from Europe, are granted national rights in a territory outside of Europe and outside of the control of Britain even at that time. And the indigenous inhabitants, who comprise 95% of the population, just have civil and religious rights.
Okay, Mr. Alderman, Mr. Becker got through quite a bit there, but I wanted to hone in on one point, and that is that we know that there were Jews living side by side with the Christian and Muslim population of Mandate Palestine. And I wanted to quote Chaim Weizmann, I hope I'm pronouncing that name correctly. He was Israel's first president, and I'm quoting him exactly, a statement that he made to the Anglo-American Committee of Inquiry. He said, "The Muslim world has treated the Jews with considerable tolerance. The Ottoman Empire received the Jews with open arms when they were driven out of Spain and Europe, and the Jews should never forget that," end quote. Going back then to the point that Mr. Becker made, the Jews who were there, do you think that they would have supported the Zionists coming in and wanting to create this sort of division, creating their own quote-unquote state, and creating division with their neighbors who they were getting along with just fine?
I wouldn't say that they were getting along with their neighbors just fine. There was, as you say, a Jewish minority on the west bank of the Jordan River, particularly in towns such as Safed and Hebron. At times, it was a good relationship with the Muslim majority. At other times, it wasn't such a good relationship. In 1929, there was a terrible massacre by Arabs of Jews in Hebron, and these Jews were not Zionists. You're quite right, they were not Zionists at all. They were killed not because they were Zionists, because they weren't. They were killed because they were Jews. This is the elephant in the room it's the Arab attitude towards Jews.
Mr. Alderman, with due respect, though, do you think that Israel's first president, who was a Zionist, obviously himself, would have lied about this then?
Oh, no, I don't think he would have lied at all about it. I think, however, that for diplomatic reasons, he might well have been economical with the truth.
Okay, Mr. Becker, I wanted to get your opinion on that, because, again, going back to that point, I think it's an important one to make, where there's this historical revisionism that happens where it seems that there Muslims and Jews were always throats, and that's not the case, isn't it, Mr. Becker? So, again, you know, what does this say then about, quote-unquote, the Zionist project in the region?
Well, of course, that is true, and that, you know, what Chaim Weizmann said, and particularly in reference to the Ottoman Empire accepting the Jewish population as well as the Muslim population that was expelled in 1492 from Spain, after several centuries, hundreds and hundreds of years of Spain being Andalus and being governed by a Muslim majority, but in what was considered a kind of golden age for Jewish people who lived in Spain. And it was the Christians, led by Ferdinand and Isabella, who in 1492 expelled and subjected to extreme torture Muslims and Jews who remained and who refused to convert. So the history of bloody Christian crusades, which targeted in the Middle East, in the Levant region, not only the Muslims, but also the Jews, that's very well known, that's very well documented. The whole idea is false, that the reason that Britain established the mandate, or the mandate was established by the imperialist-dominated League of Nations for the benefit of Jewish people, or that the Balfour Declaration was motivated by sentiment for Jewish people, is completely false. All of that was for the interest of empire.
Okay, Mr. Alderman, I wanted to take a look at the British government's viewpoint on all of this ever since 1917 and ever since that declaration was put forth by Arthur Balfour. Even Balfour himself, and this is according to Palestinian historian Bashir Nafi's research, he in fact found a letter that Balfour wrote to Lord Curzon, who was his successor as Foreign Secretary, in 1920. And Balfour wrote, and I'm quoting him, such a claim, in my opinion, and this he speaks about the interpretation of his letter resulting in the creation of a Jewish state in Palestine, saying that such a claim, in my opinion, is certainly inadmissible, and personally, I do not think we should go further than the original declaration which I made to Lord Rothschild. That's one statement I wanted to quote to you. And secondly, the words of Sir John Chancellor, and he's the High Commissioner of the British Mandate of Palestine from 1928 to 1931. He said that the Balfour Declaration remains, quote, a colossal blunder. Those are very strong statements, Mr. Alderman, against this declaration actually, you know, coming to the day of light, coming to fruition.
Yes, I think it's true that almost from the day that it was promulgated 100 years ago, the British political and military elites began to query the wisdom of having authorized Arthur Balfour to make the declaration in the first place. And the history of the following 25 or so years, let's say 1917 until the middle of the Second World War, the history of the Balfour Declaration is a history of successive British governments running away from it. And this culminated in the promulgation of the white paper policy document by Neville Chamberlain's government in 1939, which was never approved by the Mandates Commission of the League of Nations, but nonetheless, Neville Chamberlain couldn't have cared less. And in 1940, the declaration, to all intents and purposes, was brought to an end. The British government, Neville Chamberlain's government, announced that 75,000 Jews were to be allowed into Mandate Palestine west of the Jordan River, after which there was to be no more Jewish immigration unless it was with majority Arab consent. That was the end of the Balfour Declaration. It's worth adding, however, that the Labour Party, then in opposition, took a very different view. And in 1944, the British Labour Party conference passed an astonishing conference resolution. And I'm quoting from memory, but the resolution said, let the Arabs be encouraged to move out as the Jews move in. In other words, the Labour Party, then led by Clement Attlee, subsequently Labour Prime Minister, was in favour of population change, or what I suppose might now be called ethnic cleansing.
Okay, gentlemen, our viewers have been taking part in this conversation as well. I just want to take a quick time out and get to some of those viewer comments, and we'll be right back after that.
No wonder every time the Israeli lobby has a chance, they jump on the Labour Party as being anti-Semitic. Jeremy Corbyn won't jump into bed with them or play to their tune, and for that reason alone, they will do everything possible to smear and ruin him. The creation of Israel is at the heart of the colonialist British Empire's long list of crimes. Never ever forget, shame on the British Parliament calling for celebrations of Balfour Declaration. Shame on France too, a 100-year black page in history is not to be celebrated, but to be mourned about. How could the British create Israel on a stolen Palestine land just to get rid of the Zionists? Who wrote the Balfour Declaration? Not Lord Balfour. This is Leopold Amery, a Jewish Zionist in the British government who wrote the Balfour Declaration in 1917. The Balfour Declaration was demanded by the Zionists as payment by the British to the Zionists for getting the US into World War I on Britain's side.
Just some of your comments as posted on our social media pages. And Mr. Becker, we've spoken about what happened 100 years ago in 1917 and ever since. But I wanted to bring it to the modern age now, to today, 2017. And I'm wondering what you see as, you know, coming out of the Boris Johnson statement, for example, where he says, and he quoted the part of the declaration where the safeguards for other communities, the existing non-Jewish communities in the land of Palestine, their rights were to be preserved. But in 2017, we have now Theresa May saying she's still proud of the Balfour Declaration, even though even she accepts that those rights of the non-Jewish communities have not, in fact, been respected, as did Boris Johnson. And then we even have, as we often say, the right-wing government of Netanyahu, we often quote them, but then even the left-wing in Israel says things like, and I'm quoting Avi Gabe, who is the new leader of the center-left Zionist Union, and this politician said, I believe all of the land of Israel, what we would call historic Palestine, is ours. In 2017, then, what does the Balfour Declaration's consequences look like, do you think?
Well, the consequences are an unmitigated disaster for the indigenous people of the area, the Palestinian people. There's no question about that. Their rights have not been upheld. I mean, the Balfour Declaration and its imperial arrogance only, as I said, gives national rights to the people who basically hardly lived there then, but only civil and religious rights to the Palestinians. But they have not, their civil and political rights are violated every single hour of every single day. There are thousands and thousands of Palestinian political prisoners inside Israeli prisons, all held illegally. The settlements continue to grow, the repression, the nighttime raids, the arrest, the torture that goes on, the turning of Gaza into a giant open-air prison. How could anyone maintain that any rights of the Palestinians are being upheld? In fact, what the State of Israel's strategy is to inflict so much punishment on the Palestinians who remain and who are determined to resist and continue, but to put so much pressure on them that they will leave without having to carry out the kind of massive ethnic cleansing that took place by means of open terror in 1947 and particularly in 1948. But that's what they want. They want the Palestinians, the rest of the Palestinians, out. And it's just an absolute disgrace that the British government or the US government or the French government or any of these governments hail the anniversary of the Balfour Declaration, because it really was a recipe for genocide against the indigenous people of Palestine.
Okay, so Mr. Alderman, I'm going to go back to the point I made earlier. How can one be proud of this declaration when, as Boris Johnson says, the vital condition in the Balfour Declaration, i.e. intending to safeguard other communities, specifically the existing non-Jewish communities, that has not been fully realized? That's something, of course, that was echoed by even Prime Minister May.
Again, I go back to the actual words of the declaration which I have in front of me. It being clearly understood that nothing shall be done which may prejudice the civil and religious rights of existing non-Jewish communities in Palestine. And the wording was deliberate. It didn't include political rights. Balfour knew what he was writing, and Lloyd George's War Cabinet knew what it was authorizing. Subsequently, as I've said, the whole eastern half of Mandate Palestine was declared forbidden to Jews, and the political rights of Palestinian Arabs were established exclusively in that area. But the Balfour Declaration itself did not promise political rights to non-Jewish minorities, only civil and religious rights. We have to accept that. That's the wording.
Okay, so let me stick with you, Mr. Alderman, because then that brings me to my next point, because Netanyahu said that the dismissal he dismissed Palestinian claims that the Balfour Declaration was a tragedy. What you've described then, Mr. Alderman, really is that this was a tragedy from the moment it was declared, wasn't it, for the Palestinians?
I don't think it was. In 1919, the Emir Faisal, son of Hussein Sharif of Mecca, with whom Lawrence of Arabia fought against the Turks, wrote a famous letter to the American Jewish jurist Felix Frankfurter saying he would welcome the Jews. He actually said, wrote that in a letter saying he would welcome the Jews. Incidentally, we need to understand why Balfour wrote that declaration. It wasn't to bring America into the war. America was already in the war. It wasn't to make sure that Russia kept in the war. Russia, under the Kerensky government, was already retreating from the war. It wasn't to reward Chaim Weizmann for having invented a new way of making explosives. It was because Balfour was a Christian mystic, and like Lloyd George, he believed that Almighty God had chosen the British war
cabinet. Okay, Mr. Alderman, I'm going to interrupt you only because we're running out of time. I do apologize. I wanted to give the final word to Mr. Becker. We have a minute and a half, Mr. Becker. If the Palestinians in the declaration itself were not given political rights, that is a tragedy, is it not?
Yeah, of course. And who gives the British government the right to determine who has political rights and who doesn't? You know, hundreds or thousands of miles away from London. I mean, that's just, an outrageous contention that somehow those words are sacred, so they carry some great meaning, and we are supposed to bow down before the Balfour Declaration and before what British imperialism did to the Palestinian people. And I agree, they didn't do it for the reasons that the other speaker mentioned. They did it for interest of empire. You know, Chaim Weizmann had promised in 1914, if you help us establish a state there, we will act as a safeguard for a guardian for the Suez Canal, which was the lifeline of the British Empire. They did it for reasons of empire and no other.
Very well, gentlemen, we'll leave it there at that. But of course, we do appreciate both of your contributions to tonight's debate. That was author of Palestine, Israel, and the U.S. Empire, Mr. Richard Becker, who has been speaking to us live from San Francisco. And we were also joined by author and political commentator, Mr. Jeffrey Alderman, who is speaking to us live from London. And of course, viewers, we appreciate you putting your social media comments up on our social media pages. And of course, for watching. Until next time, good night.